never forget the first moment when I walked in Kyo Cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the Scanlon Podcast, your weekly look at Irish international film. I'm Darren, and joining me are...
Jason.
Roman.
Alex.
And Grace.
So, this week we'll be doing the usual stuff. We'll be talking about the week in Irish film and international film. We'll be talking about the top 10 and new releases this week. But let's start with what we normally start with, which is what we watched this week. So, Jay, what have you watched since last we talked to you?
Ooh, weeks ago. I've watched lots, but I'm going to stick to 10.
There are five of us.
Yeah, no, I'll briefly mention I saw Black Panther eventually 12 years after everybody else has.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. I feel this.
I actually physically own that movie on home media by the time it took Jerry to see that in the cinema.
You know, there's another Marvel movie out at the moment.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
He just comes so quickly, like.
I'm not sure it made the top 10, though. So
okay.
I mean,
yeah. See, that's
smaller
release. Indie films, yeah, that's the problem with it.
It's the Duplass brothers, it's some kind of brothers anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would kill
Black
for a Duplass
Panther's
brothers.
Black Panther's okay, it's quite good. I
enjoyed
it.
It's one of those things, yes.
No, it's decent. It's fun. It's good for certainly for a good hour and a half until it goes full CGI overload, CGI rhinos kind of stuff,
yeah.
And then.
And it's not all plain sailing.
No, it's not, and it's a bit annoying. But the cards are great. It feels surprisingly nifty for 2:14. You'd think it's going to drag a little bit. Once it goes up to hours mark, I'm like, But I actually kind of ripped it on fairly good. I think Donald Tartt's quite right that the kind of dystopian kind of cities are always a little dull and little pointy buildings into the sky kind of thing, but that's fine. But as a celebration of blackness, it's incredible to see someone on screen like that. So I quite liked it. Worth seeing. Go see it, folks. At home, if you're into the movies. Yeah. Other things I saw, White Material, which is the what's her name, Claire Dennis movie, and it's the second one of hers after it was a Bastards. Was that one of hers?
Bastards.
Or did I just make it up? Sorry,
Bastards was 2013.
Yeah, White Material is quite good as a kind of colonial, post-colonial kind of take on a coup in a kind of African country that's not really kind of specific, but you can kind of take your pick. And it's Isabella Huppert, who kind of like is this coffee plantation owner, and she's refusing to leave even though clearly people are coming in from both sides, and she's trying to keep the workers there, and then they really, really want to be there because they know what's going on. She goes and hires people and stuff, and she just loses her mind a little bit, and reason and kind of objectivity about what's going on around her in that kind of privileged way people do in kind of countries, you know. It's like, that'll be fine, it'll be grand, we'll get an Oscar, sure. I mean, we've coffee to bring in, like, you know, it's that kind of.
Don't these people respect my business schedules?
Exactly, but it kind of, it touches on that kind of stuff, of that kind of, you know, march kind of fearlessly through the jungle because you have no idea of the local kind of feel and things like that. And it's quite well done in that regard. I really like that. It's the second one of hers I've seen. None
is this
of neither
building up to Let the Sunshine In?
I will get to it, but there's a few more of hers. I'd say there's two I've seen. I like both. I didn't love either quite yet. I'm kind of remain to be convinced of the greatness of her. Because I know a lot of people that love her films. Like, so, but I'm getting there. Speaking of great films, and the first time I've seen it, Wendy and Lucy.
Oh, I love that film. Oh God.
Keller Ricker. Good Lord. don't get all that. This is great. I'd never seen it before. And it's Michelle Williams being incredible, and I mean incredible.
Yeah,
oh, she is, but even this is probably perhaps the best performance of any I've seen of her. There's not much of a plot. It's a kind of one of those little tiny epic-y kind of films that I think I read your kind of review in the room where you kind of mentioned that it's kind of like a road movie that's not really a road movie.
Yeah,
it just kind of
stops
and kind of puts around.
The interesting
know?
Thing about
yeah.
Rijkaard is she plays with the road all the time.
Yeah.
It's often
the barriers
of the road movie with no actual movement.
Yeah,
it's a
exactly. It is, but it kind of works because it situates really, really well.
Yeah,
and this is kind of, she's kind of, in this one, she kind of is a girl that kind of struggling financially, who's theoretically going to Alaska to make money and kind of move on. She's a dog with her, so it kind of has this kind of connection but there's problems with that because something happens where she's arrested and the dog gets kind of goes missing, so there's kind of a search around the town for him. There's this lovely moment, there's a security guard that kind of hangs out near where she parks the car, and he's really kindly in that way older security guards who've retired from their jobs are, you know, that kind of thing. And he gives her money. There's this little scene, and the other person that drives the security guard to her doesn't see it, so he kind of turns away. It's just one of those tiny moments that break you. Like, it's really beautiful, really kind of delicately handled. And
it is so good at that kind of little emotional moments. And I'm getting upset just thinking of that film.
It's great. Love it so much. I don't know if any of you have seen Umberto D. It very much reminds me of that in a lot of ways. And Umberto D is probably my favourite neorealist film. I absolutely adore it. So I definitely see it if you like that.
The best depictions of dogs on screen.
Yeah, they really are. Like, I want to line up another 10 films that kind of do that. Like, this is great.
Oh, that would be a rough day.
Oh, no way. Okay, then, is that it? Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
That's a good segue, I think, because I finally got around to Isle of Dogs, which should have left me a weeping puddle. But I don't know, there's a lot of close-ups in it of crying dogs that felt almost a little gimmicky to me. That, you know, there's this constant push for, are dogs wonderful? Isn't the human-dog relationship wonderful? Which it is, and I love it. I enjoyed the film a lot, but it seemed to be trying almost too hard to evoke that, I thought. The design is, you know, it's 100% meticulous, and everything looks amazing, and the cast get a great... They have a great fun with the script. I wanted to love it more. I think I wanted to cry a lot, but I didn't.
You were ready for it.
I was ready for it. Yeah. I was so disappointed and I'd be weeping. That was the first of a triple bill I went for to catch up with a lot of things on Monday. I took advantage of the bank holiday and hid in the cinema all day. Went from that to Beast. Jesse Buckley of this parish is really, really good in it. It's a really, really fantastic performance. Sort of difficult, strange character who acts in some very odd ways at times, but she carries it so well. The film goes off in some slightly weird directions at times that I don't think always work.
What was the first feature?
And I have to say it's very well directed. The script isn't tremendous. Yeah. The direction really is, and it's very promising for where things may go in the future. But, you know, really strange. It's all set on Jersey, and there's this sense of community that's really odd. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking it looked like a sort of weird white Get Out. And it's kind of...
Finally, the white guys are going to get a return.
The first half of the trailer, because I hadn't heard of the film before that, I was kind of laughing, going, have they made a white Get Out? But it gets into that idea of a kind of insular community, and it's really interesting, the strictures and the way that these kind of impinge on this young woman's life and her expression, and there's this whole thing going on about the love interest who's a hunter and embodies all these kind of masculine ideals and yet is really sensitive. It plays around with gender roles really interestingly. It gets kind of unhinged at the end and it doesn't entirely work, but it's really interesting. I was kind of impressed.
I actually quite liked the ending. I just thought the third act getting to the ending was a bit much.
Yeah. It felt almost as if it could have done with, or it felt like it was heading to be over about half an hour earlier, and there, you know, this was like a secondary plot that they had decided to tack on.
Yeah.
And it's a strange direction for it to have taken. Then I finished off that day with a film I really, really liked, Lean on Pete.
Andrew Hay.
Yeah, I'm a very, very big fan of his. Weekend is one of my favourite films from the last decade or so. Looking, great show. And really enjoyed 45 Years as well.
Me too.
This is really, really strong, I thought. Fantastic direction. Plays with the tropes of the Western in a really reflexive way. Again, it's quite related to Reichardt in a way that it's a genre you don't see too often anymore. And the way he inverts the tropes of it are really reflective of, I think, America today and the character development in the film. It's a fantastic performance from Charlie Plummer. I was so impressed.
I heard him mention that, like, it was, I think somebody pulled an article, there, probably a Guardian one, which he tends to do, where he just pulled three strands together and try to make a story out of it. Where he kind of made, you know, the way they do these things whereby something comes out, you'll have to, this is really good, then somebody else will write, isn't this a bit overrated? Mm-hmm. And then somebody else will write, these three films are kind of connected. Isn't this a new way of doing X? You know,
My favorite thing is clicking on the Guardian film page and seeing both a 3-star, a 5-star, and a 2-star.
Same film. Exactly. So it's kind of similar to that. So they were getting that kind of English directors tackling the American kind of And he mentioned Andre Arnold's American Honey, yeah, relation between Lena Pete in that regard, and some other film from an English director set in America, which I can't quite recall. The generally pull three together, it's not an art film. Because otherwise you can't do it with two, because three is the whole, you've taken a whole country in a body that, like,
yeah,
two is that shit. No one cares.
Yeah.
But they do tend to do that. But
rule of criticism.
Yeah, but I know you're again about American Honey, and I've yet seen Lena Pete, so I'll be curious in that regard to see
it's
how
really
it
interesting,
out.
Actually, maybe being an outsider has fed into the kind of picture Haig manages to paint here, because it's obsessed with the details of Americana, and it's more a character study than I think a State of the Nation piece, but it's driven by these absolutely fantastic performances. I really was so taken with them. And he's an incredibly subtle director, I think, sometimes doesn't get as much credit as he deserves for, you know, he plays with depth of field a lot of the time. His framing is terrific, but it's never showy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's well up there. It's one of my favourite films of the year so far, I think.
Excellent.
And just one other thing I'll mention that I saw last night, I'm really, really impressed with, Kexicalu, an Argentinian film. Based on, very, very, very loosely based on the Bela Bartok opera, based on the Bluebeard fairy tale. And it's, again, actually very similar to Lean on Pete. It's communicated massively through visuals. For large portions of it, you're not entirely sure who the characters are, what their relation is to each other. It's all sort of suggested visually through the framing and the blocking. But it comes together gradually to paint this portrait of young women in Argentina. They're all the daughters of industrialists, and the way they're growing up under their fathers and under a patriarchal society. And the Bluebeard fairy tale, if you're not familiar, is about a woman who marries Bluebeard.
Told never to go into this room.
Told never to go into this room, and that you can have everything in the world. Just don't look over there. And eventually, of course, she does, and it's the decapitated heads of former brides. And it sort
of course
has
a typical
man's called Bluebeard. And it sort of extrapolates that to a national picture of Argentina, but it's very subtle. There's a lot of inference involved, and I think that's a weakness of the film as much as a strength sometimes. That, you know, you're doing a lot of the legwork, but it is absolutely remarkably well directed, and it's always nice to see a film that you could turn the sound off entirely, and I don't think you'd lose too much. It's
a rare, wonderful thing.
Yeah. Well, that was funny.
I saw again two films, I suppose, in the last week or so. The first one was Broken Embraces, or Los Abrazos Rotos in Spanish. It's an El Motobar film from like 2008 or 9. It was one I saw in the cinema at the time, I think because I was doing my leaving cert and had to learn Spanish, and just told myself that this was definitely the way to do it. But I kind of wanted to watch it again when I saw it on, and it's very good. And as someone who really likes Almodovar, you definitely appreciate it, because it's kind of got all the sort of hallmark things of Almodovar, and he's doing them very well. It's visually stunning, and it sort of just like pulsates with this kind of, it's sometimes a comedy and then sometimes immediately quite, you know, terrifying and scary. And he sort of does things, he homages the Hitchcock, and then halfway through he starts homaging himself because of the film within a film. And, you know, I think the only thing is it's sort of simultaneously like the sort of, it's a classic Almodovar film and hits, as I say, all of these things that he normally does. A fantastic cast led by Penelope Cruz and a few others that he continually sort of works with. It's just not the one I'd also recommend. It doesn't work as well as some of his earlier ones. He sort of has a few very jarring skips in tone that just kind of don't exactly work, but it's still very good. Sort of follows a blind screenwriter in Madrid, and it's, as I say, part sort of romance, part mystery, part of it. So
I think I've seen this, but the problem I have generally with Almodovar films is that I keep mixing them up.
I tend
to bleed in a little bit. I went through a period where I've seen pretty much all his films from the kind of earlier stuff right up till probably about maybe a decade ago. And I like Nicholas Lassen, I might have seen The Skin That I Live In.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've seen anything post that. No, for no real reason, I just haven't gotten around to it. But I bar The Skin I Live In, and like every time you mention that, it's like, that sounds familiar, but then.
That could be any other film.
Cruz says, that isn't helping.
This one's particularly confusing because right in the middle, the blind screenwriter starts writing a film that is one of a Motivars film, and he brings back the same cast.
First
of
all,
with this point, I was like, was this a film? Oh, this is Women on the Verge of an Early Breakdown. And I'd be like, oh, I see what he's doing. Oh,
that's pretty clever.
It is and it isn't. I think it's one thing to homage Hitchcock, it's another thing to be like, you know what else is brilliant?
Me.
I kind of like it though. Because it fits the way he
does. Yeah, absolutely. Then the other film I saw, which was again kind of more homage than sort of standing on its own, was T2 Trainspotting, which I'd seen when it came out, and I'll actually defend to an extent, because I actually think it plays around with being a sequel really, really well. There's a great line in the middle when one of the characters says to the other, "You're a tourist in your own youth," and they're being very like cynical about like
trying to recapture
the youth and the idea of. It's not really like fate has thrown them together. It's more like one character got bored and decided to like look up those lads he used
to had a midlife crisis.
Had a midlife crisis, exactly. So, and it knows that. And I think it's actually balanced really well by Danny Boyle. He sort of knows going into this that he's never going to make a film with the same bombast and impact as the original Trainspotting. So he decides to make this sort of like epilogue film. And a film that even plays with things like music. You get echoes of music that was used in the original and that was quite iconic. And in this one, you just get echoes of that. Yeah. And it partly feels like a bunch of guys in their 40s listening to the music that they used to like to listen to in their 20s. And by playing with all that, it actually does a really interesting, makes really for a really quite interesting film. Now, it doesn't really stand on its own, and it's exactly the kind of film is after watching Trainspotting, you go, you know what, I want more of that, and you can watch this as a nice sort of addition on. But yeah, in you know, with cinemas continually dominated by sort of sequels on sequels on sequels, it's kind of interesting to have a film that sort of critically approaches that and sort of plays with that a little bit.
I'd agree with that to an extent. I think it is very clever in that regard, and that it's very much a movie about making a belated sequel.
Mm.
In that one of the characters is literally making a belated sequel of his own youth. But I feel like it still indulges a little bit too much. Like, I think towards the end, there are moments when it looks like it's going to get really nasty.
Mm.
Particularly towards the climax, and it pulls back and it sort of leans into the nostalgia in a way.
Yeah.
I think that's
interesting, because I kind of watched Trainspotting recently enough, which kind of led me to this. And if you read the like Trainspotting book, it's a nasty, horrible book. And then the film managed to find this like light, near comic tone somehow from that book.
Yeah.
And then even in the ending and stuff, there are a lot of nasty, horrible scenes in Trainspotting. But it tends to be sort of like remembered as this lads on tour energetic film, when it's really not in a lot of ways. And I think similarly, the sequel kind of tries to play with that tone similarly. Now, absolutely, it doesn't work. It's not a patch on Trainspotting. But as I say, it's kind of an interesting sequel.
I didn't see it. It was on my list of films to catch up on the end of the year for 2017. And I got to, I think there's two or three left. Baby Driver's on that list as well. Which, just in case, just I want to point out again, Grace, right? This Jaren has seen Baby Driver eight times.
Eight times?
What?
Wow.
I'm stunned by this.
What?
I don't always choose.
Yeah, you do.
Surely you chose six of those.
The law of averages says. Sometimes it's on television and I'm like, hey, I'm going to watch this.
You choose to not turn it off.
Sometimes somebody suggests, let's go to the pictures. I've heard Baby Driver's good. I'm like, well, okay, I'm not going to be rude.
Who out there is saying, I've heard Baby Driver?
You're not
obviously not people listening to Grace.
Don't listen to them.
I quite like Baby Driver. But
not to be waylaid by Baby Driver. But that was on the list.
Okay, that was an example.
That was the list. Trainspot 2. T2 was on that as well, right?
Don't see Baby
Driver. I've no intention of.
It's very short.
Yeah, well, don't tempt me towards. But T2, I agree with you in terms of Trainspotting, because I was of the age when Trainspotting came out that had an impact on me. So I saw it at cinema, and then I saw it again at the cinema, and it was like kind of like, whoa, a new voice English film, blah, blah, blah. And I think its impact has somewhat dimmed a little bit over the years, but I think it's still very good and still full of energy and invention and stuff like that. And I've read about the sequel and what it's about, there's some people that like the idea that what's playing with nostalgia, and some people kind of hate it.
Mm.
And I'm kind of thinking, I might be better off just not watching it. Because I don't want to sully
potential
risks. I might get to it at some point. And like, both of you are raising interesting points about it. Like, I might get to it.
This is really weird. This is like the art house version of like the prequels ruin Star Wars.
I can rub my chin and talk about it, then it's much more important.
Yeah, but you can separate.
I know what you mean, because I definitely did go into this thinking like if this is a disaster, I'm going to be so annoyed. You know, I like to think that a sequel doesn't, or a prequel doesn't, sully the original, but to that I always say Prometheus, which now I watch Alien and I'm sort of like, ugh.
Yeah, it's just easier to pretend that there's only two Alien movies and the others.
Yeah,
careful.
Alien and Alien 3.
The two best Alien films.
Oh boy, here we go.
And a chill filled the room.
There are four good Alien films. Okay.
I'm a purist.
Just one.
Just the first
one. I can accept that.
That's all I'm at.
I like the second one best. First one's grand, but
I cannot
stand it. There are a lot of people who do.
I don't understand how it's physically possible to dislike Alien.
God, really easily.
You just be dead inside.
That's
the one box that Jay likes to check.
It's a bombastic action fuel sequel to a small suspense film horror film. It's going to alienate people. Thank you. Who are fans of the original. I can understand.
Well, I like Alien 3 better.
But Alien 3 is closer to Alien.
I like Resurrection better.
Alien
really?
3 has one good quote in it, and that's it.
Alien 3? The assembly cut of Alien 3, I will go for it.
Right, so we got to have a fight here. Is this what's going to happen? Is this going to be an alien
disagree.
Fight? An alien versus Predator fight?
I like how we began talking about like Trainspotting.
I know, there we go here. In quick
five easy notes. Well, I don't think I've ever seen Trainspotting, so I cannot offer an opinion on it.
But on that note, Grace, what did you watch?
Okay, what have I watched recently? I watched the Villainess on Netflix earlier this week, which I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I had quite high expectations of it in the sense that I suppose I have quite high expectations for a lot of Korean films. But this one, I feel like I just expected it to be much better than it was. It opens really, really well. Like the opening scene is a first-person kind of shooter perspective, which is done very well. And I thought, kind of the further into the story you get, I thought that might have been quite a clever way of writing it in the sense that you don't really know what's going on, so you're only seeing very specific things. And, you know, as you fill in the details around it, maybe it will become more clear. But I'm not really sure. I think the film is more like, it's the story is very, very basic, very overdone, like very cliched type of stuff with no subversion or inversion at any point, which, again, I was just expecting because it's not an American film, so you kind of expect things to be a bit more clever sometimes. But, a lot of good action shots with a very piecemeal story. But it was fine. Like, it wasn't bad or anything. I expected to like it a lot more than I did. And what else have I seen recently? I saw Infinity War after the last podcast I was on, which I really enjoyed, possibly even loved. No, I really liked it. I think it was one of those films where there was so much going on, you're kind of like sitting there with your hand suspended in midair because you get so distracted by everything, it never quite reaches your mouth with a handful of popcorn. You know, that kind of way? Okay, well, that's how I felt about it. I can see why it would be jarring for some because it doesn't pause for breath ever. But I feel like the MCU has probably earned that at this stage given it's how many films have been made in the run-up to this.
19.
Yeah. So
counting Homecoming and Incredible Hulk, which are questionable cases, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So the point being, you know, you're very familiar with the characters, very familiar with all of their beats and so on and so forth, so you can probably niche this together and have...
What, you mean you didn't use the characters, Grace?
Oh my god, what will we do?
To be clear, the thing about introducing characters is nonsense not only because of the 19 films, but also because the film does introduce... Like, it literally has, we're 2 weeks from release, we can talk with little bits of spoilers. It has Mark Ruffalo playing a character who disappeared from, like, the MCU in 2015, going, what's this new thing? Who's this new guy? What's going on here?
Okay.
So that anybody who hasn't watched all 19 films can go, oh, that's what that guy is. That's what that's doing there. That's what's happening now.
How is Vision still here? He's such a terrible character.
Oh, Vision's
hope
not
somebody says
Vision.
That.
Vision's the not, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say though, like in Infinity War Defense, it has exactly the right amount of Hawkeye.
Is that not?
Ba-dum-tsh.
Thank you.
I don't mind Hawkeye that much. I mean, I'm not saying
Hawkeye.
I'd go to bat to him or anything, but I don't understand why people.
I take
like
a bat to him.
I don't mind Hawkeye, but I can't stand Jeremy.
That's what I was about to say. Me too.
Yeah,
he's,
I think I'm
yeah,
on that.
Well, yeah.
To be honest,
he has fallen out of favor.
Yeah.
Did you wonder if
that Golden Globes gag would just no?
When they were plotting this. The writers were like, yeah, but if we don't have him in this film, then we don't have Jeremy Renner doing the press tour.
Mm.
And they're like, sold.
Are we getting into spoiler territory if we talk about whether or not he's in the film?
No, you don't.
No.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's going to care.
I don't think anyone cares apart from Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy Renner is sitting at home staring at a
pile of money that he's made.
Staring at the phone.
Yeah.
You sons of bitches.
I'm gonna have to make a Bourne sequel, aren't I?
And then last night I saw 12 Monkeys at the Lighthouse as part of the Marvel season, which I'm a big fan of. I really enjoy that film. So it was nice to see it on big screen.
Me too. I saw it when it came out in the cinema, but I haven't actually seen it since at all. Does it hold up?
Mm-hmm. I really enjoy how weird it is.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And the fact it doesn't, like, it's kind of funny. You go into it expecting all sorts of big, like, from the storyline, it would be very easy to expect all these kind of big climactic events constantly happening and images of crowds and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very contained story. You only really follow one or two people for the vast majority of it. And it's quite talky and probably quite alienating to a lot of people for that reason.
I remember that book in his favour back in the day.
Like, I always remember thinking, when I watched it again fairly recently, it's almost as if he reverse engineered, and I used to work with sort of similar people in New York for a bit, but people who had mental illnesses who would think the government were after them, the actual like rants that they would sort of come out with. I remember thinking, like, Terry Gilliam almost took some of that down and said, what if that were true?
Like, what if he was displaced in time?
Yeah. What if he had been at this battle and now was, like, trying to find the last tiger?
It's kind of the Fisher King kind
of...
I
think there's an argument to be made that it's, like, it's perfect Gilliam. It's got that sort of... got a bit of Brazil in there as well.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of, obviously, the Fisher King. Mm. It's, and it's got, two markable leading men in Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt.
Mm.
And it's...
When Bruce Willis isn't going straight to... DTV,
but Death Wish got a cinematic release here.
Did
thank
it?
You very much.
Did it?
Yeah, we covered it on the podcast.
Did we?
Obviously.
Did I cover it? I have no memory of this. I'm pretty sure I didn't.
That was
cover.
During the infamous 11 or 12 film week. We may have banged that one
and
out.
And finally.
That might have been one of the end finalies.
Yeah.
Death Wish. Double weeks. And we're done.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But yeah, I actually, 12 Monkeys is great because it's like the exact opposite of what you expect when you're told the premise is Bruce Willis is sent back in time to stop a mythical plague.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is not that movie, but I'm into it.
Mm-hmm. It's a very playful film too, I think, which I quite like. It's very lighthearted despite the weirdness, to be frank, of a lot of what's going on in it. So yeah.
I went along to Brazil as part of the Lighthouse Gilliam season, Gilliam Python season, and it's so good to see these with a crowd, especially when there are people who haven't seen them before, because you're right, it's so weird. I remember, I've seen Brazil a couple times, but I've seen there, oh my god, this is so strange.
Yeah,
Brazil is
and
very people
old.
Around who are like, who've never seen it.
What's going on? And this is not what I expected.
Yeah, and just eavesdropping on people as you walk out afterwards. Being like,
a little
was
bit of that
right?
Actually, because I was with my sister who hadn't seen it before, and I remember like the credits rolled, and I was sitting there thinking, because every time I see this, I'm like, I forget how strange it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's going to turn to me and be like, what a pile of crap. And she was like, that was great. I really enjoyed that. And I'm like, she's shocking me though recently because she keeps saying that Ghost Stories is one of her favorite films this year.
But Ghost Stories is.
And I'm like, so it has one very strong fan.
I
but it's not the type of
so you're the guy.
It's not the type of film I would expect her to like that much.
Is that the Tree Short Horror thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which
with a questionable ending, but
I did mean to go see it, but then it kind of disappeared pretty quickly.
I can see from
it was
the
a
film
ghost.
How the play must be great though.
Yeah.
I say it works much better as a play.
Well, the play is immersive in a way that obviously film can't be, which is an issue with it.
You can play around with sets a lot.
Probably not if we don't hear Ghost Stories. I think of a ghost story and
I just want everyone screaming
from the room.
You think this is Aliens to the Casey Affleck Ghost Story?
Rooney Mara has to go
to a pie factory and defend herself against.
I am well aware of how well Aliens is revered, and I'm in a minority on that. I don't think Ghost Story is Aliens.
And it has a bunch of strong defenders.
Including me.
Yeah, I know. It's using it?
No.
Tiebreaker. Alright. So I watched a bunch of stuff, mostly rewatches, so very quickly. Gattaca was on television.
Gattaca's pretty good, eh?
Gattaca's a lot of fun.
And the room comes together.
Finally happened.
It's also on Netflix if anyone just got a sudden urge to go and rewatch it.
Mm. It was on Sky, I think, because they're releasing Anon next week, which I suspect won't be as
this Anthony Nicol again, is it?
Yes.
And what's the one he made with Ethan Hawke, that awful one that was the Dublin Surprise?
Not Kill List. Good Kill, Righteous
Kill.
Good Kill. One of the Kill movies.
Utterly dreadful.
Righteous
Kill.
It's like a drug.
Yes,
yes.
The bad Robert De Niro.
Yeah, it's not very good at all.
It's
coming from you, Jay, you just don't mean Darren, take this.
I will back Jay up on this one.
This is a rare, wonderful thing where we have Darren on
this.
It's very grudging. But
I know you don't like it. I know you.
it feels wrong.
It does. I know.
But the thing with Good Kill is that basically it's a science fiction film that has to be set in the present day, which means that you get all the heavy-handed stuff and the allegory, except the allegory is the thing that is allegorizing.
Right.
And it's like, ah! But whereas Gattaca's great. I loved Gattaca as a teenager. I haven't seen it in years. And when it was on, I was kind of nervous. You know, when you revisit something that you loved as a child. And it was actually amazing to watch it and discover so much more going on there. I mean, the wonderful sort of film noir aesthetic of the whole thing, the way it's structured with ambiguity. So, like, the whole plot is about the murdering of this... The murder of this senior official at Gattaca. And the film is structured so it's ambiguous as to whether or not Ethan Hawke actually did it. And it's quite clever in that way because it gets the audience sort of wondering, can they trust him and stuff? And even stuff like the allegory at the heart of it. Like, it never would have twigged to me when I was watching it 12, 13... It's a great allegory for passing, for example. It's two incredibly handsome men who are living together, sharing a life. One of them's going, you know, to work every day and pretending to be something he's not. And it works beautifully. It does that thing that science fiction is meant to do, where it takes something that is relatable and very straightforward and very accessible and makes it universal. So it's like, it is just wonderfully constructed. And it's a science fiction film, so all the really heavy-handed dialogue, like, you want to know how I did it? It's because I never saved anything for the swim back.
Yeah.
Which would be absurd or ridiculous, but because everything's so heightened, it works beautifully.
I always like the way it managed to sort of convey a sense of dystopian future without flying cars and just using, like, nice LA architecture.
Oh, that's it, the cold Californian, suits.
Yeah.
It's very, like, clinical image, like a very sanitized...
Well, that's cinematographer Slawomir Idziak, and I apologize for the mispronunciation, but he worked with Kieślowski on Three Colors Blue, The Double Life of Veronique, and Decalogue as well. So he brings this sort of, like, almost European aesthetic to everything, so it's slightly green and very sterile, and it looks utterly unlike any other sort of science fiction film. You had a lot of, like, films that were trying to copy it afterwards. Like, is it The 13th Floor looks a lot like it?
Yeah, and that's
not a good film. Whereas The Matrix looks a little bit like that, but then becomes The Matrix.
Can I mention, actually, because I haven't, and I'm just curious, just in the Andrew Niccol kind of thing, has anyone seen Simone?
Yes. Simone is not as bad as people say, but it's not really good at all.
Okay.
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
It's actually not that bad in, like, the shouty Pacino performance in Post Revolution.
I'm shocked.
You're managing expectations there. That's the hard stuff.
I think it's the problem is that now that we've kind of got that Simone technology, a lot of the sort of, like,
that's true.
It seems like a relic.
Well, that's the thing, and it's really sad thinking about, like, Niccol, because obviously he did this. I like Lord of War. I know that's.
I like Lord of War too.
And it's. I also obviously The Truman Show, which
you
wrote. And it's like you look at that.
Truman Show's a masterpiece.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, part of that's down to Weir and part of that's down to Carey and stuff, but a lot of that's down to the script.
Yeah.
You look at what he's doing now, and it's like, I am dreading watching Anon. I will watch Anon.
Of course you will.
So will I. Yeah.
I probably will.
I am dreading it.
They've got the motion posters on Dublin buses now. So when they pass, it's like, Clive Owen, Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, God, I hate it already. I'm too old for
emoji posters.
It looks like it has the production values of an expensive mobile phone.
But it's a Sky. I've seen Sky advertising. So it looks like a Sky One film.
Sky
Movie.
Kind of like,
Sky.
No, also, I don't really like Clive Owen. So,
again, take a lead.
Mean thing to say or to disregard
a
film over Bush, not
about he's not somebody that I wouldn't watch a film because of, but it's equally he's not somebody I'd watch a film because he's in
it's
somewhere Clive Owen is working through the logic in his head.
Would you watch
a
film with him?
I would, but I wouldn't go out of my way. It's like, oh, Clive Owen's in it.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever said
that. Clive Owen invites you over. It's like, Jay, I've got this movie I want to watch.
If it's something you're not interested really in seeing and then you see that he's in it, you're just like, well, no.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I feel.
He's not a deal breaker.
And he's not like the only actor I feel that way about. I hate to indicate anyone.
Let's make a list.
Where Clive Owen is sitting.
Let's make a list as a podcast extra. I've got so many.
He actually carries it around with him. It's really uncomfortable.
It's reached to the back pocket.
And I also rewatched Annihilation on Netflix, which was great. I actually liked it more this time around.
I think I need to see it a second time. I liked it a lot the first time, but I remember feeling distinctly like it didn't quite land at the end. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the build-up was wonderful, and then it just didn't seem to coalesce at the very end.
I think I watched it with a few people, and like immediately afterwards, I was like, that was brilliant. Do you think this happened? They were like, no.
Stop.
It had me thinking, like, was this one of these things where I just, like,
made up my own movie
more than it actually was?
Yeah. I had a similar experience, actually. I saw it in a room, I think, four people, and I was the one who really enjoyed it, and everyone else didn't as much, and it sort of made me like it more. But everyone saw a different movie, and I think it lends itself to that very much. It lets you see whatever you want to see in it.
I think if it had ended, like, maybe 20 minutes before it actually ended, I would have had a much stronger reaction to it.
I say that about every film.
I don't know. I thought, again, it had that nice science fiction thing going on, where it's this broad allegory. You can mean as a metaphor for cancer, for depression, for the mere act of living in the world, and the change and annihilation
involved in that.
The
female cast. And the Jay is stopping. Being a mother.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's fine. And the cast are fine. I don't think I'm a Garland fan. I think that's...
He's not Garland many much.
No, I wasn't a big fan of Forrest. The other one. It didn't really do much for me at all, no.
It's one of those films.
I know, but that's... It's so gif-able.
Old Man Coyle.
It seems to
emoji posters.
There's certain indie American films that do scenes that seem to entirely exist for that reason. That felt like one of those. That felt like one of those.
That's your Dublin bus motion poster. Yeah. But you feel like that's where we are as pop culture at the moment. You could argue
that's not where I am, Darren. You are. No. I am not.
Okay, but you could argue that's the entire thing with Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is an entire TV show built around gif-able moments. I mean, Infinity War, and this is not a value judgment, is very much of that writ large. It's a moment of gifable moments, and that's grand. That's where culture is.
Most Marvel movies.
Yeah.
But the thing about Marvel films is, though, there's 19 of them. You can dip in and out, watch ones, like ones, pass over others, and go, right, that's grand. Like, you don't have to take them all these are all, you know, cathedrals of brilliance, and I love the whole thing. And some people do. But, like, I mean, I like some of them, dislike others.
Yeah.
I think most of them are kind of meta, okay?
Yeah.
So I mean that they're fine, but and same Game of Thrones, like, just, you know, like this episode, just 60 more you can watch, like. Whereas
I don't think Game of Thrones works quite like that, Jay. It's like I didn't like episode 2, but I'm gonna jump to episode 14 and
in continuous terms, like, I mean, the story can develop as well.
Or maybe what you mean is that you can skip past certain characters you don't give a crap about.
Yes, I could also do that.
Like when you're reading the book and you're like,
oh just a teen chapter. How many pages? Obviously, how many pages? If there's less than 10, I'll read it. If there's 40, I'll be like, I'll read the last page you have. All right.
And then very quickly, we'll do like a rapid fire round. Rewatched I, Tonya was fantastic.
Yeah.
Still one of my films of the year. Rewatched Gifted, which was quite nice last year. Underseen, that's the one where Chris Evans has his niece in care. And, it's a very small, very indie film.
Mm.
Himself and Jenny Slate apparently met on the set.
I do like Jenny
Slate. For your gif-able moment there, Jay.
Is there a gif-able moment in it? It's an American independent film.
There's
all sorts
of gif-able moments.
Is it a Sundance film? Is there some quirky?
I don't know if it's a Sundance film, but it is quite quirky. But it's very sweet. It walks that very fine line. I really, really enjoyed it.
Okay, go.
And then finally, I rewatched Captain America: Civil War, and it has not aged well.
Oh, boo!
It was not a good
film. I can't remember if I liked that.
I think you liked it.
Did I?
Yes, I remember feeling this. May just be because I don't want to agree with you on this, but also I think I remember you quite liking the action beats in the second half.
I think what happened is the first time I watched it in two halves because I had to pause for some reason and come back to it, and then the split of it just didn't really work at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got persuaded eventually to watch it again. I don't really know how it was, actually. That was really good work. But anyway, we watched it. So I watched it in one kind of sitting, and it worked much, much better. I think I think the ending of it was quite good. I quite like the ending of it.
Okay.
I like Civil War a lot. It's no Winter Soldier, but it is very good.
I might have preferred it, actually, although I quite like Winter Soldier, but I might have preferred Civil War.
I love Winter Soldier.
There's a Winter Soldier in it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's like
it's
cold.
It has Robert Redford as the best cast in the MCU.
That was like 3 days.
I love that. There,
it's been years.
Your skippable moment. It's like all of Winter Soldier is contained in Robert Redford.
Yeah,
it's like
absolutely.
We are all Robert Redford.
I love the character work of Winter Soldier. The exploration of Steve and the exploration of Bucky, I think, is very, very good.
I didn't love Civil War just because I felt like they set up loads of, like, this is it, this is the end. And then immediately it was like, not the end.
Yeah, but there's like 40 more films going on.
But even in the film, the, like, set up and the moments and the, like, now everyone's going to fight. And you were like, yeah, but they're not...
They're not really fighting. Yeah. This is the point. There's a moment where it's like, are we still friends? Depends on how hard you hit me. And I'm like, how am I supposed to take any of this seriously?
Yeah.
There's the moment where they're afraid to have, like, Tony Stark take a principal stand because that would mean losing fans or alienating fans. So instead, he doesn't actually believe in anything he's doing. So why do I invest in this?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Steve. It's not like Steve has a principled argument against what he's doing. He just it's a metaphor for gun control where this one dude really, 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 really likes this one gun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
don't really see that in it at all, but all right.
You've seen, how many times have you seen this? 11 times. Four.
You just watched it over and over again.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Sorry, I just have to ask. Is Baby Driver the worst in the last couple of years? Have you got something more than 8 times going to be or something? Come on. Call me.
I've already seen Three Billboards 7 times.
Oh, good lord, man.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot for punishment right now.
That's 21 billboards.
So many.
That's too many billboards.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. I've probably seen Dunkirk for research about 11 times.
But research is different, but
okay.
And at least it's short.
Okay. Dunkirk is fine. Like, you could definitely leave it on, but I
could definitely leave it on. But like, do the ironing.
Yeah, like,
when do the
ironing,
we can
dip
like,
in and out.
Why would you go back to Three Billboards again? It's miserable.
That is 7
great
conversations
yeah
with a CGI deer.
I love that Annihilation turned woman having an epiphany talking to a questionable CGI deer.
That was in a sci-fi landscape, not Missouri.
I feel like
that scene of her talking to the deer is one of the better scenes in the movie because she actually comes across as something vaguely human,
yeah,
as opposed to a cardboard cutout that somebody attached animatronics to.
God, I hated that film.
Sorry, I just...
So much.
Anyway, sorry.
Like,
so
I didn't hate it. I just... Like, I didn't like it very much, but I didn't hate it. I just thought it was so nasty. Everything about it was so unpleasant.
It's so mean. Mm. It is a fantastically
mean
film.
But in a way
film
that just alienates you, because you can watch movies that are mean-spirited and get something out of it, but Three Billboards, I'm like, who is this for?
Darren.
It's our
Darren Lindgren. I'm going to write a film for Darren, says that.
He doesn't like Captain America.
Darren is low-key more miserable than me. He hides it much better.
That's the big issue.
You just wear it all in your sleeve.
Well, yeah. I mean, I did literally complain the big issue with Civil War was that none of the characters killed each other. It's like, not miserable enough is
also
my big issue.
Also, a valid point you made about The Last Jedi, I should say.
What?
In the fact that people should have died when they did not die.
Oh yeah, lots of people should have died.
Yeah.
But yeah, my ending of The Last Jedi would have involved a court-martial, a blindfold, and a firing squad. And I
would
have been, that's
been much
that's a 5-star film right there. Kids cry themselves to sleep, but that's a 5-star film right there.
You should be put in charge of a studio there.
Disney, can you imagine if I was allowed to run Disney?
I would go see a lot more Disney films.
Yeah.
It would probably work with that like classic Star Wars ending of just, you know, the eyes closing, tied to the post, and then...
No.
That's great, wasn't it?
The body slumps over.
One drop of blood onto the ground.
Yeah. Lightsaber falls to the ground. It's like, yeah, perfect.
I shot
cut.
And Finn.
Yeah.
So let's move on to
I'm going to the midnight premiere of Solo. This is what I have been reduced to.
God,
Ron Howard. A Ron Howard Star Wars
movie. You know what, though? You're guaranteed to go say at the end of it, that was fine. It was a Ron Howard film.
Certainly
fine.
So.
Hey.
Half an hour later, what was that film we went to see half an hour ago?
Ron Howard.
Hey. It's like, have you ever Ron Howard film? Forgettable.
Really
strange,
so weird.
Giving you his tour.
I've
seen
this.
Give me the tour. No, that was not This Is America, Jay. Just so we're clear, that was a different
This video. Is Millennium Falcon.
He's like walking around the Millennium Falcon showing you all random bits of it, and it's just the oddest thing.
It's weird.
Unlike most things involving Donald Glover.
He introduces himself as Donald Glover. It's not even in whatever character he plays.
Lando Calrissian.
What? Why didn't he do that?
I cannot understand anyone sitting down in the cinema seeing that and going, you know what?
It is becoming a thing though, because Amy Schumer addressed the audience for whatever that comedy's doing. Hi, Cineworld. I was like, what the fuck is this?
So
it's like I'm trying to sit here and
finding your
film.
Feet had Cillian Murphy as well, which
please
is
stop
like,
go see
a movie.
Didn't
want to
see
it.
What, did it?
I didn't in the end.
Timothy Small fixes barges. Come on, tell me you're
not.
There's
not a film I don't think there's a film I will see that somebody who stars in it is asking me to see
on general principle. And I was like, yeah, I'm not, don't be so needy.
Just when you grow up, like, I got like a personalized introduction from Jessica Chastain or Greta Gerwig.
Then
yes, but I'd be seeing them anyway because they're Jessica Chastain and Greta Gerwig.
You saw that?
Oh, it's a free intro.
That's null. Yeah.
Did you see that Twitter thread about Greta Gerwig going to see I Feel Pretty?
Yeah.
It was funny, but Greta, we're in the cinema. It was funny, but still though.
Why? What happens? I only saw the first tweet.
She basically laughs and comments throughout the whole
she
film.
Runs a commentary on it, which is bad etiquette.
Like she's playing one of her characters? That's quite funny.
Yeah, but not for people who paid to see the bad movie on the screen.
Oh, well, right. Anyway.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the news. We'll try and cover this relatively quickly. Aoife McArdle's Kissing Candies is being released in Irish and UK cinemas on June 22nd.
And then we're back, Darren.
Screened at ADIF. I'm going to let Jay speak to the value of this film.
I really liked it in the classic sense that myself, Darren, working this, Darren didn't. So
thank you, Jay.
I think, no, it was somewhere in the middle, perhaps. I think if that was literally and figuratively speaking, and you're sitting in the middle, and you're somewhere in the middle, in our opinions. Yeah. But no, I thought it was great.
I think my abiding memory of that is not leaning over you after saying, I told you how much Darren hated.
that sounds alright.
It's visually interesting. Go see it. It's out on June 22nd. Also out, Hugh Trevor's script of The Matchmaker is doing good business in the Netherlands at the moment, which is always good. It's good to see Irish artistry.
What is this? Sorry.
It is a new Dutch film called The Matchmaker. I believe it's a romantic comedy. It's storming the box office in the Netherlands, but it's written by Hugh Trevor's, which is an Irish writer and director.
Good man.
In terms of stuff, The Citizen Lane. There's a new trailer release for that. That's directed by Thaddeus O'Sullivan.
Yes, which I never heard of until 2 days ago.
And
it's very odd that she suddenly appeared.
Sort of
it's
popped
like,
out of
it's
nowhere.
Like, what? You can't just make up films and put them out there. That's not how this works.
Surprise.
You're not Netflix, internet.
Thaddeus O'Sullivan, you're not Thaddeus.
I really like the look of it, but I hate the title. I really hate the title.
Citizen Lane?
I mean, come
what's it actually about?
It's Hugh Lane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about Hugh Lane setting up the Hugh Lane Gallery.
Citizen Lane.
It's not a great
It should be Changing Lanes.
Already taken by Ben.
Night Gallery?
In his Hugh
Night Gallery.
I don't
know. Bacon Bacon.
My alien ate vegetarians.
Damn vegetarians. God damn it.
Tom Von Muller, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm looking forward to seeing unfold in 6 months.
I didn't realize it was in Avengers until the credits. I was like, what?
All the people at work thought that was Donald Gleason.
I think you'll find it's pronounced Dumble.
Captain Door.
He's always going to be that to me.
Yeah. Saoirse, as in inertia, is my personal favorite.
I don't know where she gets that from.
Yeah, that's
Ryan Gosling.
Wrong, right?
Exactly. I feel like Ryan Gosling mispronounced it and she was too polite to correct him. It's like, yes.
Another thing
like
to,
that.
You know, take Gosling to task on. But anyway, we move on.
All right, and then finally, the Newport Beach Film Festival, which we covered a little while ago.
I think Stella should send it all out. We should definitely go all expenses.
Well, I mean, come on, we are broadcasting from Cannes at the moment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like we've done enough.
What a beautiful view we have.
This croissant is delicious.
You're really standing Alex.
Is there a trigger here?
But yeah, so basically the Drummer and the Keeper picked up the Audience Award for Best Foreign Film there, for example.
I haven't seen that.
But yeah, Pink Kong Studios Departure picked up the Festival Honor for Best Animated Short. Earthly Encounters won Best Foreign Short Family Film. So Drummer and the Keeper is the big one there, and that seems to have done really, really well.
Swept up, didn't
it? And it's great because I've actually been hearing from people who've seen it, so that's actually generating good word.
No, I think he's a big fan.
And it's always good when you hear people sort of talking about Irish films as well, people not involved in sort of
people
film.
Outside the bubble.
Yes, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Who are these people you speak of?
A few of them.
And then finally, because this might be a segue to talking about Cannes, Alexander McGuinness's Highway is going to the Marché at Cannes at the moment. So that's currently on sale, Irish Film Abroad. So if you are at Cannes, if you have a couple hundred grand or a million nine rand, just feel free to pick that one up.
Well, you can get it free as well. You get a second film.
Throw me in.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal, people.
And they don't hard sell it, which is always good.
Yeah.
But no, so any news from Cannes, actually? Anybody, anything interesting or particularly exciting?
Lars von Trier's manager, our publicist, or whoever it was today. He said he's gonna stop
him talking.
No.
That would be good.
I think it was a publicist or somebody that works for him or with him said that he's gonna stop patting women on the behind now because of the Me Too movement.
That's a fabulous.
What a trooper.
So gracious.
And we say things people can't change. Shame on us.
Yeah. The fact that
That's the takeaway, right?
Khan
there.
Khan has really, really stepped up. Really stepped up.
Well, I mean, you know what? Well, they're wearing all those high heels. You know, I mean, logically, proper red carpet.
And
that
would only just stop Lars.
Yeah. Jesus. To be honest, I'm fairly sure that everybody at Cannes has thought that at some point or another.
And yeah, still watch his films. It's a weird.
Yeah.
He's terrible. Those... people make great films.
Yes. They do. Sadly.
It's really odd, though. It's one of those things where, like, I will still watch Chinatown. I probably won't watch that many new Polanski films. But...
no, I will not actively fund
Polanski. Yeah,
anyway,
yeah, that's the thing. But von Trier's personality has just put me off.
Yeah, he's quite repulsive.
Which is
a lot of that is in his films, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, that's part of the issue.
I mean, game fun. Unless you watch The Idiots, which is really, really
the Idiots,
funny and horrible.
The Idiots, I really don't like it.
I like it, but I really, really hate watching it.
Yeah, it's... I think it is.
It's actually horrible to watch.
I think it's full on mean spirited.
I'll just tell the story, right? Just on The Idiots, just before we're here. I was doing a film course thing a few years back, and they screened The Idiots, and it was about 7 of us. I'd seen it before. A couple of the guys hadn't seen it before, to have watched it, and... we can put her on, you know, and I don't know if many of you have seen it.
No.
Oh, okay, so wrong one. In terms of the specifics of certain scenes or whatever. Like,
it's
but,
difficult.
It is difficult, right? But it's basically this group of kind of actors, kind of amateur actors who pretend to be mentally disabled and do all sorts of stuff, run around town and...
a lot of nudity.
Yeah, a lot of... you know, erections. And
so as classy really, as you would
it's,
imagine.
It's awful, but it's extremely funny at points.
It's
horrible to laugh at, but it really works in terms of what he's trying to do. It works, right? But I can see why somebody would be like appalled by it and wouldn't watch it or whatever, and that's fine. But anyway, we watched the film. The lights went back up, and one of the guys who I think his favourite film was like some action film or whatever. Like he never barely seen.
Not a Chris Nolan movie?
No.
Which was every guy in mind.
It might well have been, actually. But he was green. Like, he honestly looked like he was about to die.
To ease yourself.
Yeah, like, this guy is so full on. Like, he'd never seen a portrayal at all. And he honestly looked like he was going
to
die.
Did you have obligation to, like, prep him?
Oh, no. I never did that.
Okay.
No,
the best thing to watch somebody watch a film like this.
Yeah. I honestly thought he'd have to be revived. It was tough. God bless him.
All right, then. So let's move on to talking about the top 10. At 10, Truth or Dare.
Do you know, I was considering going to see that yesterday, and I didn't.
Great story,
that's
the best thing we can
that
say.
That is the closest that anybody in this podcast has to an experience.
No,
of that.
I mean, the premise sounds interesting, but I did hear it's meant to be somewhat less than great.
My sister, who likes terrible horror films, saw it and said it was a really terrible horror film.
That's not the one
my
she told you to go see.
No.
There you go. Report back next week, Grace. Although probably won't be the top 10.
It was Veronica was the one she told me to see, which was grand. But yeah, this was not good. And when people who like love terrible horror films are telling you that this film is actively bad, suggests it might be actually bad. At number 9, still in there, but probably going to drop out next week, Blockers.
I fully expected you to say The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
It's back, baby. Yeah.
It's actually
it's
a number 1.
I was looking up like film times in my closest cinema yesterday, and it was still listed there. And I was like, oh my god, how is it still here?
Yeah. And it's
but
on home
not
media.
Just still there, like 3 showings a day.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Since December.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it's on home media right now. I mean,
people will still be going to see it, even though it is out.
But I think there's probably a sing-along screen that's probably helped that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they did do sing-alongs about a month ago.
But they're still singing there.
Experience.
Yeah. I haven't seen it either way.
How have you seen Baby Driver 8 times but not seen The Great Showman in the theater?
Yeah.
The priorities are skewed.
Come on, Darren.
But yeah, so Blockers is in. Blockers will probably be out next week to make room for Life of the Party, I suspect, because you have to have one studio comedy at any given moment in the top 10. It's like lol.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At number 8, I apologize, I'm going to mangle the pronunciation of this, but Narsexoni na Nebia.
Beautiful.
Yeah, perfect. It literally means the fiancé's occupation, I believe. It's a Polish film. It's a romantic comedy of errors about a woman who gets trapped in a series of ever-escalating lies while preparing for, I believe it's her best friend's wedding.
Is this one of these kind of specialist screenings that kind of happen every
well,
so
like
often?
Well, like Pitbull,
that...
I think,
a
couple of weeks ago. It is a Polish film. It's very popular over there, and it's good to see it get me wrong here as well.
Yeah.
Cool. At number 8.
7.
Peter Rabbit.
Still there.
Still going.
Wow. Sorry, that was wishful thinking there, Jim.
Yeah, dude. Closer and closer to 10.
Yeah, keep nudging it. If we keep nudging it eventually.
I think that's fair.
At number 6, Rampage.
The one that I most kind of want to see because of you.
Thank you. I'm doing good work here.
Your favorite film of the year.
It's not a good
your
film.
Your favorite film of the year.
That's what I'm hearing.
Not a good film. It had some good moments in it. And The Rock really sells earnestness.
Yeah.
The Rock, really, you believe
we should
that
see Hero.
We should go.
See it in 48. It's fantastic. You know, The Rock charges $1 million post about his films on social media, on his Instagram, Twitter.
Per time?
No.
Is that cross-platform?
I believe that's cross-platform.
I would sell anything for $1 million on my social media, so if anybody wants anything, so literally anything.
What about
Baby
Driver?
I'm gonna undercut. I'd do it for $900,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will do it on a pro rata basis of what my follower count is to The Rock. It's still probably a couple of quid, but... you know,
just make me a crisp €5 though.
Buy me a bag of crisps, I'll tweet about something.
Yeah, you'll get half a bag of Christmas. And we'll tell you got a bag of
Christmas. No, I'll do it for exposure.
Social media
experience,
intern.
I do remember, my social media moment of the week might have been The Rock replying that infamous DJ Khaled tweet.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was a good tweet.
Mm. That is like, shut down Twitter, we are done. The Rock has...
I can charge $1 million for the
tweet. Yeah. I've never thought of anything that funny.
That's
so that's
what
they
pay.
Everything is just whizzing over my head right now.
It's okay, it's the internet.
Yeah, it is a PG-13 podcast.
Oh,
but
really? Oh, are we allowed one F word? Because I threw one out already. Okay. Bleep
but we muffled that. We were all talking at the same time. And you clearly didn't mean in a sexual context, so it's perfectly
did
fine.
Did it? All right, did it.
Did
it? I can't remember what I was talking about.
Jay's Me Too moment. Number four, A Quiet Place.
Wait,
we're just on 8. Oh, shit, good point. No, we were on 6. At number 5, Tully.
Oh, yeah, I've heard this. It's good.
I really liked it. I want to see it.
I like Young Adult quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I will get to this at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I said the word is that's probably not quite that level, but it's still pretty good.
The issue is, well, okay, not the issue.
Alex
Harris
is awesome.
The thing with this is I went in and I was kind of dreading it because it's a movie about motherhood and you're expecting it to be of a tone with Young Adult, which is like brilliantly acerbic and bitter and twisted and warped and stuff. And it actually ends up, it took me by surprise, pleasantly by surprise, because the tone is much more Juno-esque in that it's a much gentler movie than it appears to have been marketed as.
Yeah, the trailer certainly looked a little darker than...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that Donald Clark of the Irish Times described it as, that Mary Poppins, we need to talk about Kevin mashup, you know, when you want it. Which makes me think that maybe there is something wrong with me, that I'm like, this is uplifting. But yeah, it's surprisingly uplifting.
Okay.
It's very sweet. It's Theron is, as usual, amazing in that it's
great.
Very well observed. Yeah. I know that it's fashionable now, I think, to sort of complain about Juno. I still quite like Juno.
The last time I saw it, I quite liked it. It's okay. I'm never a massive fan of it, but it's held up as well as it could hold up in that regard.
I think it's just trendy now to pick up something from 10 years ago and be like, you know what, this was always a heap of shit.
Yeah.
So you know when you guys were going on about these things?
I didn't like it ever.
Yeah.
I think
I was ahead of the curve.
I like Young Adult. I think it was amazingly forward in terms of Juno. That's all. Like, the Juno was fine, but
Young Adult was very good. I liked Young Adult, but I don't think it was.
I thought it was really great.
That was about the same. It was just in a different direction.
Much better.
It was just angrier. It was just really angry. It's good. Patton Oswalt's great. Charlize Theron is as ever brilliant.
Yeah.
It's wholeheartedly worth seeking out. And maybe watch Tully as like a palate cleanser afterwards. Perfect. At number 4, A Quiet Place.
Grand job.
Darren throws that out there to the room.
Yeah. I think
people have mixed feelings on it. I loved it, so...
I am with Grace.
I'm happy to see you doing well.
Alright then, taking the hint. At number 3, Sherlock Gnomes, which is there. It's both opening this weekend and in last weekend's top 10 because it was a preview weekend.
So it opened last weekend. Enough of this now. No, it's not opening next weekend. It's opened last weekend.
Ocean's 8 is opening on a Monday, so it will have like a 7-day weekend.
That's ridiculous.
My personal favourite one was, what was it, Spectre, which opened on like a Monday, so it had a 9-day weekend counting bank holidays.
Can we just say the world's favourite one and Spectre shouldn't be in the same sentence in any way, shape, or form?
I thought that was a marketing coup. thought that was kind of brilliant. An 8-day opening weekend, so you can smash all the records you want.
It just feels ridiculous. It's like that line in Willy Wonka where it's like, we're going to move the test to Monday. We're going to move the test from Friday to Monday before you've learned all the things. But in any case, it's Thursday, so you put your book down. Yes. What's happening?
Yeah, it is an attempt to bolster. It's also, I suspect, based on past performance from the studio in question, an attempt to get out ahead of critics. They did the same thing with Zoolander.
Was Romeo and Juliet the same thing?
Yes.
I've seen about 40 minutes of that when I was babysitting, and I had to basically kill my niece.
But
no, I didn't, of course. But thankfully, it was the last 40 minutes.
Yes, that's it. And you wonder why Jay didn't like Juno.
No, I did like Juno, I just didn't like it as much. But no, me and Juliet was dreadful.
I was all in on Sherlock Gnomes when I heard the
name. I do like the poem, yeah, I know, yeah, of course you're in.
Like, my dream job would be the guy in Paramount whose job it is to name gnome sequels. I'd be like, Gnome Alone. It's like, the gnomes are there. And somebody breaks into the house, I'd be like, No Man's Land. It's like Dunkirk, but with gnomes.
I'd watch Gnome Alone all day.
Come on,
Gnome Alone sounds good. Gnome Alone.
Gnome Alone 2, Lost in New
York. Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, the ideas write themselves, people. Yeah. So I'm actually really hoping that this generates a franchise, even though it is, by all accounts, quite terrible.
Yeah.
And does star John
Depp. So it's not a sequel to Romeo and Juliet.
It is a sequel to
Johnny
Depp.
Depp.
Okay. Johnny Depp is Sherlock Gnomes. Okay. Yeah, there we go. I love how we were almost on board. It was like...
And a chill filled the room.
Yeah. That's
what were we saying earlier about people who put you off seeing films?
Yeah, yeah, there we go.
He may be out of his depth.
Alright.
At number two, I Feel Pretty. Amy Schumer's new film that Jay is apparently not being sold on.
I know. The trailer actually isn't bad, but I suspect anything that's good is probably in the trailer.
It's not a good film.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so.
It's a messy...
Wouldn't be rushing out to see it now myself.
Yeah, and it wastes Michelle Williams.
What?
Oh, no.
Yeah, what? Michelle Williams is there in the role that...
You sound so upset.
Oh, yeah, she's the best.
She deserves so much better.
She really does.
Brilliant. She's one of the greats, though.
She really is.
She is. She's fantastic. And this is very much...
A homecoming paycheck.
That when she signed up, the idea was that this would be like, I don't know, like Tropic Thunder was to Tom Cruise, for example. Mm-hmm. Or like Talladega Nights was to John C. Reilly. This would be the moment...
One of the great comedies of all time.
People will look at you now and they'll say, not only does she deserve an Oscar, she's also funny, fantastic and hilarious.
Yeah.
And the movie just squanders it. It's not a good movie. It's horribly ill-judged. It has great difficulty with tone. It's got a premise that is at once incredibly clever, but also so dangerous that it practically cups its own hands while using it. It's a body transformation comedy without body transformation. It's a woman who has an accident, wakes up one day, thinks she's pretty, thinks she's been transformed, which obviously has all sorts of uncomfortable implications, because lots of people obviously think that Amy Schumer at the moment is quite pretty, and that arguing that she's not is not the best thing that you could be doing. And it also, then you get into the whole mean-spirited thing, where is she in on the joke, or is the joke on her?
But you must presume...
Go ahead.
It just, like, the trailer, I like the idea, you can sell, like, if you get a heightened kind of thing with that, you can sell the hell out of it, but it just looks like it's not necessarily one thing or
the other. The issue is, you could do, like, a wonderful, like, bleak deconstruction of the body transformation
probably
comedy.
Would work quite well,
and Schumer, that's the perfect...
And then Schumer would be very good. Yeah, exactly.
The issue is that it wants to do that, and also... be a reaffirmative life sort of lifting sort of, like, there's a moment where they go from a big inspirational moment that you have to have in one of these films to another character pointing out the company health plan covers psychiatric counselling, and you're like, that's the tone we're going for here. It doesn't work.
You can't have it both ways, like, I don't think it doesn't work.
And I'd really like to see her be given a properly good studio comedy vehicle, because I think she deserves it.
I'm not for Trainwreck.
I quite like Trainwreck.
It could, yeah.
No, it's very long, but it's not bad though.
And it plays to her strengths as well. It's written by her as well. It's got a very, like...
I quite like it.
And
it's probably a ground way to watch it again. It is a bit long,
but
it's good.
It is, yeah. It's not Funny People long, but it's pretty long.
I never saw Funny People.
We'll put that on the list, Jay.
No.
And another movie on Jay's list, at number one, it is Greatest Showman. No, it's not. It's Avengers Infinity War.
Hey. Has made $45 billion this week.
It's actually only made €637,506. But yes, we're running total at €3.2 million.
Shabby.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Fastest movie to a billion worldwide, and it hasn't even opened in China yet.
Good lord.
Yeah, it is responsible, I believe, for MoviePass in the States re-implementing their you can only see a movie once policy, because apparently people were using their one a movie a day ticket to buy multiple tickets to Infinity War and sell them for like $2 and make a profit off them. It is
entrepreneurial spirit.
It is
private enterprise.
Yeah. That is right there. It's capitalism in action, baby. Much like the film itself. But no, at the Infinity War. Who's seen it here?
No. I have not. I don't
rather particularly
say anything about it.
I will be seeing it clearly.
You'll be seeing it in 4DX, unless here's the thing, Jay. We did promise on this podcast you would go to 4DX.
Here's
the catch. Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
The Cineworld will stop screening Avengers in 4DX and will be replacing it with Deadpool 2. So you still have to go to 4DX. You just have to choose whether it's going to be between now and Deadpool 2.
Pick which Josh Brolin Marvel movie will it be?
Yeah, so there we go.
Jesus.
I got dragged along to the Avengers in 4DX, and it is truly something to
experience.
I don't know. It's kind of like getting on a roller coaster and realizing, like, oh, I'm going to just be on this roller coaster
for 2.5 hours.
And I realized that during the trailer. They've also, like, coordinated to the 4DX environment.
That makes it 3 hours then, really, in total.
Exactly. So
how are the Malteser ads?
Yeah. The Jurassic World 2 trailer became immediately more exciting from its, like, boring CGI mess, because you're getting sprayed with water and the dinosaurs roaring and
getting
punched in your back. And the one, you know, where they, like, go flying off the cliff.
Yeah. It's the one where you have Jeff Goldblum in what I presume is the only scene that they got him for half a day to film, which is the life is life is unpredictable. You could almost say life finds a way.
Yeah.
I have never seen Jurassic World 2.
Well, if you put off going to 4DX, we will eventually.
That would be the only option. The other thing
I might have to disappear.
That they haven't really worked out is, it's all well and good when somebody gets sprayed with water or something in the film. And you get sprayed with water. But it's a 3D film, so you immediately have to remove your glasses while also being hurled around the actual cinema and, like, clean them on your shirt and then put them back on and be like, all right, back we go.
And the cycle repeats.
Yeah. Darren, what are you doing to me?
Where does the water come from?
There is a spray.
You best not to know.
It's a team of men. Just super
with a
soaker.
Little pump,
You joke, but there is, like, the Cineworld staff actually do have to have, like, guys in office chairs just, like, keeping an eye on everyone, presumably for, like, liability reasons. The whole thing is
really
strange.
Yeah, they're really concerned with liability when they're throwing you around.
Water and smoke and steam from above. So if it's raining, you get water from above. If somebody gets, like, lands into the water, you get sprayed, like, in your face by a thing on the front of the seat in front of you.
Are you secured in this seat?
No.
The person thrown several rows ahead.
Is it rocking side to side, or are you lifted up?
Yeah, rocking full, like, back forward to the point where, like, when you're following the Guardians in their spaceship, that works best because you do get that, like, smooth, like, and you're like, oh, okay. But then during other scenes, like emotional scenes and talk scenes, and they kind of are like, whoa, twist, and you sort of go, whoa, back. It doesn't really work.
You are now emotionally disoriented. Yeah.
A gentle weep vibration.
Yeah. Now, there are other, like,
emotionally shaken.
They've worked out, like, passing air past your ears. So if somebody is
flying,
like, flying at you or, like, shooting at you something, and there's things flying past the character, you get these little, like, puffs of air beside you, which is kind of enveloping. And the other thing is when characters get punched, and there was a lot of punching in the Avengers movie. For a film about, like, these godlike characters, it did come down to just, like, being punched all the time. But you actually do get, like, things in your back. You get, like, a pressure pad, and, like, somebody gets stabbed in the back, and you get stabbed in the back. It's
how long before somebody sues?
It does seem
this guy right here.
Yeah.
For emotional stress.
I don't know. Like, something about this description is giving me sort of a twisted desire to see what it's actually like.
I know.
You should come along, Grace.
No, once I sit down, I will hate myself.
Me too.
That was exactly what I went through. I was like, you know what? A bunch of people were going, it's like, sign me up. And we went along, and immediately when it started rocking, I was like, I made a huge mistake.
How much did you pay for the
It's like £20.
That's actually, the
My Mercury Red ticket didn't cost much more than that.
It's like a 3D film.
In Cineworld, the tickets are what, like €14?
Yeah, anyway.
So it's not that much of a markup.
Might as well pay for the bit of spray of water. Yeah.
I mean, come on, that's Evian. Yeah, that's Evian in there. Perrier.
I've been to Cineworld, so I would not be surprised if it was toilet water. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, something to maybe not experience, but certainly hear about experience.
When you start,
it's okay. And listeners will remember that Jay has agreed to do this at some unspecified point in the future.
Somebody film that.
Please. Oh, don't worry, it will be verified.
Livestream on
Facebook. So,
new releases out this week.
Sorry, what?
I'm ready. Nichols and on, as we kind of talked about already. Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, I'm kind of dreading. It's Facebook again, right? Basically, that's what it is. It's about the erosion of privacy.
It's like altered reality or something. It's like we've all got fake eyes in the future, and people can just change things, and you can not see a car, and there is a car, and that kind of thing.
I didn't actually realize you were on a bit of film. You said Anon, so I was like, oh, as in.
Oh, right.
What's next?
And then I was like, wait, how do we get from there to Facebook? Sorry,
I'm going to let you be the canary in the mine for this one.
Very gracious.
He's going to see a fly times before he has a proper opinion.
No, thanks.
We're going to see
a fly
times.
You're
saying, it's not that great.
Yeah.
Hey. Also out this week, Breaking In, which is James McTeague's movie starring Gabrielle Union and Bad Billy Burke, about a woman...
Billy Burke.
Yeah, I love Billy Burke. Love Billy Burke.
Who's Billy Burke?
He was
dad in Twilight.
He was also from...
Who's Billy Burke?
Second season of 24, the creepy
yes,
father in the All Four.
I only got to one season of 24.
Season's great.
I'll tell you what the problem is, right? Once you get to 10 episodes of 24, right? No matter what happens there, who's kidnapped for the fifth time, you know it's not going to be resolved for another 14 episodes. It drained me of the will to live. I got to one season. Two episodes into the second, and somebody else got kidnapped. I was like, yeah, I can't watch anymore.
You've seen Billy Burke. It's great.
If you say so.
His casting in 24 is fantastic, because literally like, we cast this...
20 years ago at this point,
wasn't it? Yeah, we cast...
17 years ago?
I was very late to this.
No, that was when I was in second or third year in secondary school, so it's definitely at least 15 years old.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, yeah. I didn't know who he is. Sorry.
But, yeah, so Gabrielle Union plays a mother protecting her family during a break-in with the tagline that is almost enough to get me to see it, payback is a mother.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
Falls the flat.
Okay. Also out this week, Entebbe.
Read the book. I've seen a drama.
You've
documentary.
You've seen three of the films that were released in one year of the original.
Yeah, event. I mean, I've read them, seen it, and many times variations of this.
Yeah, but I mean,
even if it's good, I know exactly what happens. So
yeah.
It's kind of
history. So yeah.
spoiler alert! I'm about to say
they all die, people.
In the end, everybody dies.
Indeed.
On a long enough curve, everybody's mortality rate approaches one. It's messy, it's not great, it's confused, disoriented.
Trailer looked like that.
It's interesting, it has some interesting ideas, it also does that thing that a lot of movies do, where they have a film that's set in a distant country with a cast that is primarily of different ethnic groups, and chooses as its focal point the two white characters who are the least interesting.
Yeah,
in this case, the two German characters who literally have no reason to be there. And it's like, how can we emotionally invest in this story? Let's focus on the two characters who have no reason to be there.
German characters? Wasn't it an Israeli operation?
Oh, well, yeah, but this is from the perspective of the hostage. The two of the hostage takers were members of the complex, the Berner Mayer. Apologies. It's very important to get that ordering right. They're very sensitive about that thing.
Well, you would be, wouldn't you?
I mean, they've got a brand.
Always got to start a terrorist organization up, right? Make sure that
you're first there.
My dad, did that be name? It'd be right. Some people.
People, a snazzy name is halfway there.
You betcha.
Also out this week, a movie that's been described as unreleasable by at least two different critics, including Emmanuel Levy and, I believe, Donald Clark of the Irish Times, How to Talk to Girls at Parties.
Sorry, it's from the story by Neil Gaiman. That makes it very releasable.
It was 3 years, I think, since it's been made. They've had major problems with it.
It's a very weird looking...
Yeah,
really
is.
Like Gaiman,
you don't really get a vibe for what it's going for.
Donald Clark gave a 1-star. I read his review today.
Hates a lot of things, though.
He does.
He's like you.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It's J minus one.
Yeah, one day... You'll embrace hope and become a little bit more like Donald Clark.
Mm.
But yeah, it's apparently messy. I was really disappointed that I didn't get to see this at ADIF. I was also really disappointed that the company wouldn't send me a screener of it, despite asking me to...
Glowing endorsement there.
Yeah, it's very, very nervous.
Yeah, they're not pushing it.
They're really not. It's more burying it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also out this weekend, Life of the Party, the Melissa McCarthy comedy about a woman who goes back to college with her daughter. Also not screened for critics.
Sounds like a Rodney Dangerfield film.
Wait.
Which
Melissa
I would
McCarthy.
Watch, by the way. I actually quite like Melissa McCarthy, so do I.
I was going to say, I like her. Melissa McCarthy.
I generally end up watching them at home. I almost never go to the cinema.
Spy
season.
Is phenomenal. Spy is
great.
Is one of the
great.
Best studio comedies of the past.
I was laughing
years.
At The Boss, was this, or something? She was
okay.
Just like The Boss.
And I like the ones with Sandra Bullock.
The Heat.
The Heat. That's also, I love Sandra Bullock.
But I mean, part of me is also suspicious of this because we've had two good studio comedies so far this year, one after the other. We have Game Night and we have Bockers.
Do you want the exception?
Can we get three?
No, no yet. Well, you never know.
It's good to be hopeful.
We could be pleasantly surprised.
And then also at this weekend, myself, Grace Solis, and Adif, it is Revenge.
I have very mixed feelings about this because I don't know. I keep reading these things calling it this like feminist subversive masterpiece. And I'm like, what movie did you see? Because I didn't see that. Like, I enjoyed it in the sense that it's like I really like the way it's made and the color block and the aesthetics. Like it's gorgeous to look at, and there is an element of satisfaction in the later events of the film. But I mean, it's like I don't think it's too spoiler to say it's a fairly standard rape revenge fantasy. Otherwise, it's not by far the only film that's been made like that. I'm probably not the worst example of it, but I don't know, it didn't really do that much for me beyond the stylistic elements.
Out of interest, are the people calling it feminist men?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not all of them.
Because a lot of male critics tend to do that. They see something that, you know, the woman gets.
The woman has a gun!
It's like,
that's feminist! The woman has a gun.
It's
okay to enjoy this. I'll go out on a limb and say I actually quite enjoy it. I liked it a bit more than Grace did. I don't think it's a feminist parable.
Yeah.
I think it's more aware of those issues than most films of its type. It's directed by Coralie Fargat, and I apologize for mangling her name there. There's a bunch of interesting stuff there to do with the gaze and stuff like that, particularly towards the end, where the lens shifts from the male gaze that you get for the first half hour to a female gaze, you know, in the last half hour. But that still means in order to get there, you have to have like the camera ogling your female lead for a good hour into the film, which is, you know, not.
So it's trying to get both kind of.
It's trying to have its cake and eat it.
Yeah, it's tricky to do that.
It is tricky to do that. I'm not sure it manages, but at the same time, I have a soft spot for really dodgy horror films, and this is an exceptionally well-made, extremely dodgy horror.
You can get very caught up in it. Like, I'm very open to if somebody interprets it differently to me to see what they take on it. But
and it's you're right about the colors as well, the saturation, the oranges, the blues.
It's gorgeous to look at.
It is
very well made.
Even just the folk pictures I've seen, it looks great.
Yeah, and obviously the red as well, because there's a lot of red, and there's a lot of neon and stuff like that, and the soundtrack has this wonderful sort of pulsing synth thing going on as well.
Yeah,
I like the look of it. I think I'm going to check it out and see where I fall.
Could have been, quite fun and distinctive, like The Guest, with a bit more.
Yeah, but very few films are like The Guest.
Can I join in and say I didn't really like The Guest? No. I'm allowed to say that.
Balance
you,
Roland.
The Guest is fine.
It's okay.
The Guest is amazing.
It's not amazing.
It's a Halloween Christmas film. It's about a magical visitor who comes and changes.
It's
so much fun.
Yeah.
But look, the
and
80s. With John Carpenter.
That's what you took from it.
Yeah.
Not that it was like a Halloween Lifetime movie.
Was
that
okay.
Was the best part.
It was okay. It was fine. I just didn't see the fuss. That's all.
Okay. Also, it was the moment I fell in love with Dan Stevens. It was like, took me a lot to get over it.
He's
Abby.
Really good in that.
Yeah.
I think, actually, yeah. I wasn't totally sold on the movie, but he carries it as much as it's carried from me.
I think that was it.
There's his favorite.
He
carries it as
much
as he's carried. That's it, bro.
I cannot expect that. It was wrong of me to expect more of you, Mr. Stevens.
Mr. Stevens, you did the bare minimum this film. Well done, you.
Perfectly adequate.
There's nothing wrong with perfectly adequate.
Thank you. But I'll take that as a compliment.
That's fine.
Alright then, so I think that wraps things up. But if people are online looking for a bit more Jay, Ronan, Alex, or Grace in their lives, where can they get some?
Lord help them. Get out into the sunshine, people.
Or the rain.
You do realize anywhere that physically is.
Yeah,
you realize you can listen to this podcast in the sun.
Yeah, but why would you do that?
Why would you ruin the sun like that?
Ah,
but we had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
We did. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at J Kyle, enjoying myself, enjoying all the films, giving them 5 stars all over the place.
You're too positive.
Also, if you follow me, there's going to be some serious Eurovision stuff in the next couple of days, so God help you all.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
Oh, I'm a huge Eurovision fan, I'll be all over.
Get me on Twitter as well, at Baron Ronan.
I run a podcast called When Irish Eyes Are Watching about Irish films.
You can find me on Twitter at Pixie Grace.
I'm going to give a shameless plug. My book, Opening the X-Files, Critical History of Visual Series, is currently on sale to celebrate the Star Wars Day on the 4th of May. But the publishers are basically putting their entire back inventory on sale. You can get it for a 25% discount. So if you if you wanted a book about the X-Files and have found that it is precisely 25% outside of your allocated X-Files book budget, now is the moment.
Get out of that niche crowd there.
There will be no better time. You can access it at McFarland Books. The postcode is popculture25. I also host a podcast at 250, and this week we'll be discussing the Grand Budapest Hotel with wonderful guests, including from this podcast, Stacey Groudon, Charlene Madden from The Lighthouse, and special guest Phil Bagnall, which I was as surprised as anybody.
Is he a friend? Does he just like arrive outside your house?
He told the stereo upon his head.
Yeah, so take it easy, guys. See you next week.
Bye. Later.
Bye.